All right, I want to take a quick break here, and I want to talk about something that's very near and dear to my heart, and most likely, if you're listening to this, to yours too. Because have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? I know when I was trying to get the Around the Crease podcast off the ground, I had so many questions. I didn't know how to record an episode, how to get all my shows into the apps people like to listen to, like whatever podcast app you were using right now. How do you make money off the podcast? There was just so many things that I was not even sure to where to start. But turns out the answer to every one of those questions was so simple. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. You know, before I was using Anchor, I was using another service, and I tried Anchor after hearing about it on a podcast, and once I tried it, I have never gone back. It has been an amazing experience, fantastic support. I love them, absolutely. So if you've ever wanted to start your own podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. That's anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. And again, that's anchor.fm/start. And I can't wait to hear your podcast.
You're listening to the LaxRecords.com podcast, episode 21. Today we're continuing last week's theme and doing a high school lacrosse roundup. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Mike here. Welcome to the LaxRecords.com podcast. So last week we kind of started a little bit of a new thing with just doing a high school lacrosse roundup, just talking about the week that was and things and just things that I found interesting. So that seemed to be received pretty well, so we're going to go again. So I want to do a little bit of follow-up from last week first, because last week one of the big themes was basically the Torrey Pines, St. Ignatius Prep, how they fared and how the rankings might be impacted based on those results. So, you know, I'm just kind of curious to see how they went and figured I'd follow up. So it was interesting to note that last week I thought both teams would make it into the top 25. You know, Gonzaga was a top 10 at worst to start the season. And after Torrey Pines had beat St. Ignatius Prep and then St. Ignatius Prep had beat Gonzaga, I kind of thought that there was a pretty good shot that all three teams would make it into the overall top 25s. Now, that kind of happened in a couple of them. When I took the overall look and do the consensus rankings, Torrey Pines came in as the 26th team, while St. Ignatius Prep was 32. So that's kind of taking all five polls into account and seeing where they kind of shuffle out based on the overall scope of things. What I found interesting that is in the consensus, Gonzaga did make it in to the top 25. So I'll have a link to those consensus rankings in the show notes and on the website so you can find those pretty easily. And, you know, another interesting note is Gonzaga and Torrey Pines both made it in the top 25s of three of the five national polls. But in two of those, Torrey Pines was actually behind Gonzaga in those. And St. Ignatius Prep didn't make it ahead of Gonzaga in any of the polls. So those are just kind of some interesting notes. Like, I know it's hard doing these national rankings, and you got so many good teams in to try and get them in. So I know it's difficult for everybody. You know, I used to do this for a living, so I know how much of a challenge it is to try and get all the teams you want to get in. So someone always falls out, and, you know, I always try to tell people, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So, you know, while they might not have made it in this week, you know, you give it over the course of a season, and usually generally things shuffle out as long as everybody keeps winning. It will be interesting to see how Gonzaga's loss to Bullis over the weekend will affect that, because when you looked at national rankings, Bullis made a pretty big move this week. They went from 17 to 13 overall, and so, like, and then they beat Gonzaga pretty handily. So it'll be kind of interesting to note how that'll impact. You know, I expect Bullis to move up. Obviously, I think Gonzaga will probably fall out of the rankings, but considering Gonzaga may have been one of the key wins to kind of get Torrey Pines and St. Ignatius Prep into the national scope, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, if those teams just continue to move ahead or if they kind of fall with Gonzaga. Like, it's always one of those, you just kind of got to take a look at scope and see how it works out. So that'll be interesting to note for this week. So just kind of continuing in with the, the national rankings theme is that, you know, the top five remain pretty consistent with McDonough holding on to the top spot by 1 point. You know, Culver Academy out of Indiana and Darien out of Connecticut, both are really, really close to the number one spot. So McDonough had a pretty good win over Chaminade this past week. So that should, again, and I think Chaminade was basically top 10 in a lot of the polls. So that should very well seal. It might actually make a little bit of a difference, because when you looked at it, McDonough, Culver Academy, and Hill Academy out of Canada all received first place votes from, or all received number one rankings out of the two polls. McDonough and Hill were number one and two of those, with Culver pulling in one first place choice with the other. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that McDonough win over Chaminade, plus just what they've done so far this season, will impact that overall. You know, I kind of already talked about why I thought, you know, Torrey Pines and whatnot did not get ahead of Gonzaga this week. But one of the teams that I find most interesting is Smithtown East. They are ranked all over the place. In their top 10 in two polls, and they're not ranked at all in two others. And that's interesting, because it just kind of sees one of those things. It's like no one really knows what to make of Smithtown East. So I'm sure, you know, depending on how they either feel validated or they feel slighted. And it's really interesting to see a team, you know, just the large discrepancy. You know, it'd be one thing if they were ranked 25 and a couple other ones and not ranked at all. You can kind of see that. But to be top 10 and two and not ranked at all and two others is, I find it interesting. And I'll be interested to see how, once they get their season started, I think they start this week. So I'm recording this on Sunday, so I haven't actually seen any of the results. You guys will obviously see the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm recording in the past, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. So it'll be interesting to see another one. So for me, there's a lot of teams to just to keep an eye on. And now that I actually don't do national rankings, and I kind of take a step back and look at what everybody else is doing and just kind of look at it, I find it a little bit more relaxing, for one thing. My Sundays and Mondays aren't quite as stressful, especially when teams beat each other. So we do another follow-up, I'm sure, on that in the next episode as well. So is anybody who was kind of paying attention to the site early on in the season, probably in early February, I did a little bit of a 2017 games to watch. And again, I'll have the links in the show notes for that if you want to check out the games that I picked. One of the games that I'd selected was Episcopal Dallas out of Texas and St. Mark's out of Dallas as one of the games to watch, is because, you know, ESD, they were kind of one of the early favorites to win the state championship this year. And St. Mark's was getting their longtime head coach, Hayward Lee. He was coming back to the sideline after being gone for, I think, four seasons. So it was, you know, one of those things I was like, oh, it's just kind of an interesting storyline for me. And I can't say that it did not disappoint. ESD came out over 13-9 over St. Mark's, which is obviously a pretty close score to begin with. But, and I am going to butcher, even though I asked Coach Kennedy how to pronounce his name, I know I'm going to ruin it, so I apologize in advance. It was Nakay Montgomery. He had 7 assists and 2 goals for ESD. So obviously he accounted for 9 points out of the 13 goals that were scored for ESD. So, and that helped the Eagles improve to 7-0 on the season. And an interesting note, I think Pat Kennedy is now one win away from, I believe, his 100th for his career. I might have that wrong because I don't have the notes in front of me. I was just kind of thinking about that as I was talking. So, but I know he's close to a landmark, and I'm pretty sure it's 100. And I knew he needed 8 to start the year. So I'll have a link to the coaches who could achieve milestones list in the show notes as well, because that's something I've been keeping an eye on and updating throughout the year as coaches hit different landmarks. So a couple other mentions that I want to do this week is, and again, I'm going to apologize. I'm going to kind of just leave it as a standard. I apologize if I mispronounce any athletes or coaches' names in these. So, you know, I don't always hear them, so it's always a little bit of a challenge, and I'm not the greatest linguist of all time. So Gunnar Kerrig of Maurice J. McDonough, not the McDonough, and the MIAA. MJ McDonough is out of Pomfret, Maryland. They play in kind of southern Maryland. It's kind of not really sure how to describe it. I used to cover high school football in Maryland for years, and they have a really good football team as well. They had some really great receivers in a few of the years that I was covering them. But anyway, back to the off the tangent. Gunner, he had one of the more impressive stat lines that I think I've seen. Like, I was sent it, and I think it was couldn't tell who actually sent it, so I almost didn't believe it. I was like, oh, this is probably fake, or someone had a typo or something like that. But I confirmed it with their head coach. Kerrig's committed to Ferrum, and he had a total of 13 points. He scored 9 goals, had 4 assists. He won 20 faceoffs, and he scooped up 19 ground balls in a 20-12 win over Lackey. So for me, when I saw that, I was like, wow, that kid is putting in work. He is all over the field with the faceoffs and the ground balls and the goals. And it was one of those, like, as actually the submission I received, which I'll have a link in the show about how to actually submit stats to the website. When it was received, it said he had 19 faceoffs won. And so when I emailed the coach and asked him if everything was correct and to confirm, he was like, yeah, but it was actually 20 faceoffs. So he actually added one more to the stat line. So I just thought that was pretty impressive and worth mentioning. Another player that's been kind of coming pretty regular onto the Stilac stat leaders for the season is Connor Florich. He's out of Newsom. He added another 7 goals to his season total in a game against Durant last week. He, in 10 games, he now has 47 goals and 17 assists, and he's helped Newsom to an 11-0 record this season. So it's definitely interesting to see how the Wolves are progressing this year, and obviously Connor is a big propeller of all that. And kind of staying down in Florida this week, and again, I'm going to mispronounce this school. Immokalee. We're gonna go with that. Why not? But their goalie, Raymond Perez, broke the known Florida record for most saves in a career on Friday night. He had 640 for his career. He made 9 saves against Jupiter Christian to give him that 640, and he broke the previous record, which was 626, held by Craig Day from Dr. Phillips. On the year, Perez has 83 saves this season. So, you know, big shout out to Raymond. You know, I know the coach is down at the Indians. We're just going to go with that because I'm not going to butcher the school name again. So if you're listening to this, coach, I apologize. You know, I know he's been working real hard, and they just came off their spring break trip, which I saw the photos on Instagram and Twitter, and it looked like the kids had a really good time, and they're just a really good program down there, I believe, in the Southern Florida area. So wanted to make sure I gave Raymond a pretty big shout out this week. So kind of on to the main part of this week's show. I'm actually going to have 2 different interviews. One interview, I'm going to talk with Clay Welch from Ponte Vedra. He was this week's LaxRecords.com Player of the Week. And I did a little bit of an interview with him, kind of talking about, because Coach West, the head coach at Ponte Vedra, put together a pretty brutal schedule for Sharks this week, kind of preparing them for the playoffs. Like, I think they have like 4 or 5 games remaining in the regular season. And they played Mountain Vista, which was a Colorado Final Four team last year. They played Wando, which was a defending South Carolina state champion. They played Charlotte Catholic. They played St. Augustine out of Florida. They played, I believe, 4 games in 5 days. And that just kind of, you know, when I was talking with Clay, which you'll hear in a few minutes, just kind of is a feeling to kind of get them ready for that grind of the playoffs. So, you know, obviously the Sharks were Lee Roggenberg's pick to win it all this season in one of the earlier podcasts where we talked about Florida high school lacrosse. So, you know, they seem to be, you know, winning on all cylinders at this point after a little bit of a stumble against Jupiter. So, but you know, by no means is it in the bag. So I'm sure they got to keep fighting for the rest of the year. So we're going to go to that interview here right now.
Talk a little bit about that game. Cause in that game you had 4 goals and 2 assists against a really good team, as we mentioned. So kind of talk a little bit about that game.
Well, it all started at the faceoff X with Andrew Adair. He wasn't losing. That really helps getting those extra possessions. And we just ran our offense, and like, we found gaps. They were so concentrated on like trying to stop me at times to where like it got my teammates open, and they were able to capitalize on that. And we just ran our offense really well.
And was that game, was that on the road? Like, were you guys, or was it a
It
neutral?
was like a, it was a neutral site in Orlando. I think it was easier for them to fly into Orlando or something like that.
So what was it? You said it started at the X, but what was it that you saw, like, that you were able to kind of to score those goals, especially in, like, I think Coach West told me you guys were down 7-4 at one point. So what were you kind of seeing in the defense that kind of allowed you to find the net?
They were slow to slide for some reason. Sometimes they just like fell asleep because we run a pair offense, and so we go from one side on our pairs and the other sides are just like exchanging, keeping their guys engaged on the other side. So basically they fell asleep sometimes because we just lull them to sleep by trying to go on one side for a while, and they just wouldn't slide, and that like let me get my hands free and find the net.
Was that part of the initial game plan, or was that something you guys saw and made the adjustment?
That was a part of the initial game plan. That's our main offense. We did run a 1-3-2. We threw that at them a little bit to switch it up, but towards the end of the game, we were just back in our P offense. So nothing else we can do.
And obviously, I know you guys play a lot of big teams in Florida, but did it feel any different to beat one of the better teams out of Colorado?
Oh yeah, it felt great. I mean, Andrew Bray, he's going to Mercer. He played like a great game guarding Monroe. We were slow to slide to him too because we had trust in him the whole time. I mean, Monroe, I still think went like for four goals, but that kid's a great player, and you can't really stop that sometimes. You only can like control it.
So what made the win over Mountain Vista maybe a little bit different than maybe some of the other wins that you guys see over teams you see normally?
I mean, you don't really get to see them that often, so I mean, just knowing that you beat them, and they're supposed to be like one of the well-regarded teams out of the West or Midwest.
And then you guys came right back the next day and beat St. Augustine. So talk a little bit about that game as well. I think I had you with another two goals out of that game.
Yeah, we came out playing St. Augustine. It was a scrappy game. They were very athletic. We kind of came into that game really slow, which is like scary. That's how we usually do after big wins. Like we played IMG Florida at the beginning of the year, or towards the middle, yeah, beginning of the year, and we beat them. And then we came out against Jupiter really flat, and that killed us. And that's like what gave us our first loss. So I was scared coming out of that Mountain Vista game on how we would like bounce back after the huge win.
And you mentioned you got Charlotte Catholic now. I haven't talked to Coach West about this, but I'd have to think like this part of the schedule must be some sort of test for you guys to get you ready for the playoffs. Is that kind of how it feels with Mountain Vista, Wando, Charlotte Catholic? Four, what, five games in the span of 7 days, plus some of these better teams outside of your area.
Yeah, it is a test. He scheduled them back to back, so that way we kind of get the feel of like the long bus ride, the playing at night, and then going to the hotel, waking up the next day, waiting a little bit, then playing kind of midday, because that's how I think it was last year for a state championship. I don't know if it is like going to be like that this year, but I'm pretty sure he scheduled it so that way we get the whole feel playing two great teams.
All right. Well, thanks to Clay for taking a few minutes out of his busy Saturday to talk. We actually talked before they had played Charlotte Catholic on Saturday, and then Clay went on to score seven goals in that game. So congratulations again to him. Obviously, he had earned Player of the Week before that, but then he just kind of sealed the deal with the performance against Charlotte Catholic. So now on to the next segment. I'm talking with Matt Kennedy from Boys Latin. He actually works, I believe, in the alumni department. So Mac, if I got that wrong, I apologize. I should have asked you, but I just got off the phone with him, and we're going to talk a little bit about MIAA. It was kind of spurred upon me talking about the inter-AC MIAA matchups in my lacrosse notebook from Tuesday, which again I'll have a link in the show notes about that. So, but I wanted to talk about the MIA with Matt because he literally wrote the book. He has a book on boys Latin lacrosse history. He has helped me immensely kind of put together the history of the MIAA. That's why I have all the champions on the website on laxrecords.com about the all-time champions, like St. Paul's has 25, boys Latin I believe has 10 or 11. So Max is the guy that has helped me put all that stuff together. So on to the interview with Mac, where we kind of talk about MIA and why they've become so powerful and how they've remained that over the course of the league's history.
Why am I talking to you about MIAA lacrosse?
Well, I've been following it my whole life. Of course, before the MIA came around, we had the MSA. And so I've been sort of an MSA, now MIA fan, basically most of my teenage and adult life. So been following the high school game here, and one of those kind of MIA junkies, I guess.
Yeah.
Nothing better to do than to follow high school lacrosse.
Oh well, obviously you're talking to a very a fellow high school lacrosse junkie, so it's a pretty
I
good.
think I'm talking to the high school lacrosse junkie.
I appreciate that. So, as I kind of mentioned, like you were kind of my first call because I think I can't remember when I started putting together. It was one of those like 3 or 4 years ago. I just kind of got curious because obviously the MIAA and NRAC. They end up playing each other, a couple times, 2 or 3 times a year, it seems like, sometimes in Haverford, same in Haverford, like they're always playing each other. And, one of those things, like most of the things on my site, like I just kind of got curious. I was like, how do they stack up? So I put this little list together, and obviously they wasn't shocked that the MIA came out on top. Out of 103 games, the games that have been played so far this year, I think Loyola's got a couple games, and I think Gilman's got a couple games against the conference later this year. But it's like the MIA 65 and 38, all time, not all time, since 2002. I haven't been able to go much farther back than that, so that'll be an awesome project. But it just kind of got me thinking, people. And I'm sure you hear people every now and then when you start talking MIAA, they're like, oh yeah, that again. Like, there's the debate on, is Long Island better, and all that. So I just thought I'd have, one of the people who know the most about the conference just kind of talk a little bit about, like, why do you think the MIAA is considered one of the best conferences in high school?
Well, if you look at, I guess if you look at the records, and I went back earlier today and looked at the Lax Power final polls since 2001, and just about every year an MIA team was in the top 10 in the final top 10 poll. And the unique thing about it is it wasn't just one or two schools. It was just about most of them. I'd say 8 out of 10 of the schools were in the top 10. And I'm pretty sure, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure since 2001, the MIA has been declared the national champion according to Lax Power, 6 of those times. So, 6 out of what is that, 16 years, that to me tells you a lot. It's the toughest league because each team has to play. Now they're only playing 9 games, but not too long ago, you had to play each team twice, and that was as tough as it got. And I know some of the coaches used to talk about it was all like the old ACC basketball tournament. It just was brutal. It was a brutal schedule. So you played Gilman, St. Paul's, or Calvert Hall, Loyola, Mount St. Joe, whatever, Severn. You had to play them twice a week, and that's tough to do. That's really tough to do.
And then that didn't count the play once they got to the playoffs, so you could potentially see one or two of those teams, what, 3 times over the course of the year?
It was conceivable that you could see a team, even your rival, you could play them 3 times. You could even beat them twice and still end up maybe seeing them in the final. So it doesn't get any tougher than trying to beat one of your closest rivals 3 times in one season. I think they say in any sport, it's tough to beat them twice. It's even tougher to beat someone 3 times. So
Yeah, definitely.
makes it fun for guys like me who like to watch the game.
Yeah, I'm sure it drives the coaches a little bit nuts, but like, of course, I say that, but then none of these teams really ever seem to take a week off. Like, no, none of these teams are scheduling the cream puffs. Like, they're not going out, and trying to find a team that went 0-15 last year just to take a week off.
Sure.
None of them really rest.
Right. Well, around here, it's tough to find, quote unquote, cream puffs. Very rarely does the A conference play a B conference team. And when they do go outside of the conference, certainly in the beginning of the year, a lot of the teams are traveling to Florida and to California and South Carolina, the warmer spots. And, they're playing some tough teams. BL plays St. Andrews of Boca Raton. They've been playing them for like the last 15 years. St. Andrews wins the Florida tournament every year, from what I'm told. So,
You know, that's not easy to do. It's one of our first or second games, and St. Andrews is like in the middle of their season. So hard for Boys Latin to go down there and play a team that's been practicing for 6 weeks when the BL team has been practicing for 1 to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so they don't shy away from tough games.
Yeah. I've always wondered too. I'm like, man, it's got to be tough, you know, trying to put myself in the high school. Remember what I was like in high school? I'm like, man, you took me out of Maryland in the winter, and all of a sudden you shoved me down in Southern Florida. Like, it might be a little bit hard to focus for.
Yeah, but I think the coaches they're glad that they go down to Florida. I think they're real glad that they come back and everyone's intact.
Cause, yeah.
You know, when you're taking a team of 40 kids, you know, you're playing parent for 40 kids for 4 or 5 days. That's probably harder than the whole rest of the season.
Yeah. So, you know, we've kind of touched on, you know, obviously each of these teams, you know, have their own strengths in their own right. But, you know, I mean, going back to the MSA, I think, you know, I know you sent me the records, I don't have them in front of me, but, you know, the conference has been a powerhouse for, you know, since before I was born. So how do these teams and programs, like, how have they maintained? Because, you know, I mean, in high school, like, a lot of the consistency, at least of what I've found, comes through the coaching staff. Like, you see the same coaches year
That's
in,
it.
Year out, and they kind of win. And I know, obviously, BL with Coach Shriver had that for a number of years. But even since, like, they've consistent. Like, so in high school, like, there can be ebbs and flows. Like, one coach retires, another one comes in. It's just not the same. So how has the MIAA/MSA, how have they been able to have been so dominant for so long?
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. It and again, I have to, you know, emphasize that I am incredibly biased. So not to say that we have the best coaches of all time and any of that stuff, but one of the reasons why I believe it is one of the better conferences, if not the best, is because of the coaching. And, you know, you can go into the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame and you can see through the decades, you know, some of the names of coaches that coach some of these programs. And I think it really starts with St. Paul's and Howdy Myers. Howdy is arguably one of the greatest coaches of all times. He coached at St. Paul's for 9 or 10 years. They won 7 titles in a row. He coached at Johns Hopkins, won 3 national championships. Then he went to Hofstra and basically started a program up there and kind of got the helped develop the Long Island lacrosse program. So each one of the schools has people like that. St. Paul's with Howdy Myers, and certainly St. Paul's has continued that with guys like George Mitchell and Mitch Whiteley, and Rick Picotta is one of the better coaches now around. And, you know, even Gene Corrigan, back in the day, coached at St. Paul's. Gene went on to be the ACC commissioner, but started his coaching career at, you know, little old St. Paul's here in Baltimore. And, you know, at Boys Latin, we had Oki O'Connor, who's in the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame, one of the sort of the founders of the modern high school game. And then, you know, Shriver kind of took from there, and Shriver was here for 37 years as the head, over 40 in total as an assistant coach for a bunch of years. But you put your finger at any school, and these names come out. You know, you go to Calvert Hall, and, you know, Dickie Dell coached at Calvert Hall, you know. One of the greatest coaches at St. Mary's, Jim Moorhead. They had some teams back in the 80s before they even came into the MSA that were number one in the state. They were playing everybody and beating everybody. And, you know, Gilman, my God, Gilman's got guys that, you know, you go through the list of some of their names, they're Hall of Fame, Chandley and Ferris Thompson, John Tucker, you know, Brian Matthews now, or Brooks Matthews, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. They're all really, really good coaches. And I think a lot of times the kids gravitate to some of the schools because of the coaches. Parents want their kids to be, to play for some of these great coaches. And I think that has helped the MSA, MIA through the years to keep a lot of these kids, they have opportunities to go to public schools, which don't, you know, which are free.
Right.
Private schools are expensive. But a lot of these parents are willing to, you know, do the sacrifice to get them to these schools that have some of these phenomenal coaches. And I think the game is changing a little now. It's certainly here in our conference with a lot of the young guys. Certainly we just hired Brian Farrell at Brent at Boys Latin, but Loyola did the same thing with Rubior. St. Paul's is going to hire Trey Whitty to take over for Bricado next year. And I think the kids are really looking up to these young guys. Andy Hilgardner at McDonough is certainly one of the great coaches going on today, young guy. I think that's the secret, is the these kind of guys directing these young boys. Parents want their kids playing for them.
You actually hit on something. I actually, in kind of in the preseason, I talked with Derek Tony at Varsity Sports Network, and we were talking about MIA and stuff like that. And we kind of touched on, how the MIA, the coaching staff has, pretty quickly gotten a lot younger, just with Picato and Shriver kind of stepping down. And I mean, I know Rubio was already in the conference at St. Mary's, but he replaced whose name I'm going to forget at Loyola.
Jack Crawford.
You
Jack
know, it was just
Crawford.
kind of like, Steven Berger took over at Mount St. Joe's. Severance coach, he was there before, so he kind of, he's an older guard that from back in the day. But it's just kind of amazing how young the conference, coaching wise, has gotten pretty quickly. Now, as you mentioned, Trey, we'll take over at St. Paul's.
And you know what? And it's kind of neat is that, Joe McFadden, and I forgot to mention Joe McFadden, but he had a dynasty at Loyola during the 1980s. I believe, I'm pretty sure, they were in the title game every year in the whole decade of the 80s. And McFadden is still now an assistant at Loyola. I believe he's an assistant. He was last year, and I'm assuming he's back this year. So even though the young guys are running the show, sort of the CEOs of all these lacrosse programs, there's still some of the grizzled old vets that are as good coaches as any are still around, like the McFaddens. Brian Farrell took over for Shriver and kept the entire staff, realizing that there's no need to reinvent the wheel just because there's a new guy in charge. There's still some great, 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 assistant coaches at all of these schools, And that's, again, I only mentioned head coaches. I should have mentioned the fact that there are some fantastic assistant coaches at all these schools as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, no one's doing it alone, and it's kind of great to hear because like you said, no need to reinvent the wheel. I mean, when you got the experience and wisdom and a coaching staff, like, why replace them?
Right.
If they're willing to be there, then yeah, use
Yeah, right,
it to your
exactly.
experience, especially as a young guy, kind of taking over and getting your first head coaching job. So, I'm sure like taking over Boys Latin has got to be, whoever takes over for Mike Krzyzewski at Duke is going to have a heck of a role.
Exactly.
And I'm sure taking over for Shriver, I haven't talked to Brian yet, but I'm sure it had to be a little bit nerve-wracking, man. You're taking over for
Oh,
like
yeah.
a legend of the game.
Yeah, anybody from Baltimore can equate to that because it's, there are two guys in our professional teams that no one ever wanted to replace, and that was John Unitas, of course,
Right.
and then Brooks Robinson. And so whoever that poor guy was that took over for those two guys, didn't have much of a chance because couldn't, those are the greatest ever, and it's pretty tough to follow in their footsteps.
Now I know you're the history guy, and I wanted to kind of ask, I didn't really prep you for this, so if you're not okay with it, just let me know. But I'm looking
Oh,
at
no.
the all-time win streaks in history, and obviously St. Paul has won 72 in a row from 1943 to 1946. And I know there's two
Right.
teams with longer streaks, but I'm just trying to think, like, will there ever be a time when an MIA school could win, even come close to winning that many games in a row again? I mean, that we kind of talked about the power of the conference, and I mean, to get through those programs, I mean, that just seems like that seems like an
Yeah.
untouchable record. Like 91 may get there, it's I records are made to be broken and everything, but could an MIAA school conceivably
I
ever
don't think so. Yeah, and of course, back then, the MSA only had about six or eight teams, and there were a couple public schools in there that were fantastic, City and Poly, namely the main two. But St. Paul's back then was so superior to the rest of the league. I talked to an old BL grad. We were like the second best team his senior year, the second best team in the league to St. Paul's. And we lost to St. Paul 17 to nothing. So that shows you the disparity in talent back in the, and maybe it was because Howdy Myers was such a superior coach. I don't know.
Yeah.
But no one will ever come close to what St. Paul's did. I think Sewanaka up in Long Island.
Yeah.
Them and West Street that.
Yeah, them and West Genesee tied for 91. They both in the
91
games is the longest that I am aware of. And the Sewanaka and West Genesee are both have it.
And did St. Paul's school here in Baltimore break Sewanaka's record? I want to say that the Baltimore team broke it, but I'm not sure about that one.
The record? No,
but
it's 91.
In,
oh, you mean,
oh,
you mean did they end
it?
That, yeah, that I don't know. You know, the 1957, like, as I'm sure you know, once you start to get back to a certain period of time, it gets really hard to find some of the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it just to kind of, you know, share the little story, like I do the most overtime games and I've been kind of trying to track that. And, you know, you can find stuff here and there, but literally, like, I found there was a 14 overtime game between a couple of schools in Virginia. And I contacted the coach. I think it was St. Anne's Belfield. And,
yeah.
I mean, the coaches were there, but literally the only way they found
it
is because. Yeah, they had someone had the article from the newspaper stashed away.
Right.
That was the only way. It was basically the last documentation that happened. I'm like, wow. Now I'm sure a lot has been thrown away.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, you know, that you hear about, you know, I know people were saying, you know, Roger Maris's record will never be broken, and Lou Gehrig's record will never be broken, and then along come these guys and they break them. So, you know, I don't want to say. I don't think certainly in my lifetime or yours it'll happen, but you know, the McDonough girls are working on 160 games.
Yeah.
And you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, I think they were an average program, or you know, not a superior program, maybe not an average, maybe above average, but not a superior program. And look at them now. So
yeah,
that
is,
I don't think it'll happen. But you never know.
Yeah, that is something. Obviously, I don't cover the girls' game, but I do, you know, for years I did track that. Now, I think I was there when, I think I started covering them when their streak was at like 30 or something like that. So,
That
was 2009. So, it's been going for a long time. I have never seen, since I started covering lacrosse, I have never seen them lose.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. They played Roland Park a couple days ago. Roland Park is one of the better teams. And McDonough beat them 17-2.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, again, I don't know. And I actually spoke to the Roland Park coach yesterday. And she said, you know, we played a bad game. We didn't play our best. And we had a great game plan. And it just didn't work out. So, because I asked her, are they that much better than everybody else? She said, no, you know, we'll see what we can do, you know, later in the season. So. I know Shriver got up to like 28 games, I think after the 2006 season. We went in 2007 and won maybe 8 or 9 games before we lost in the middle of the year in 2007. So I think we got to maybe 30, but
okay.
I don't know any modern records that have gotten very far, certainly not close to, you know, 60, 50, 70, or certainly not 91, whatever
yeah.
the Sewanaka record is.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple, like Bedford out of New Hampshire, they had won 72. That ended in 2015. You know, they played decent, you know, pretty decent teams, but obviously, you know, I mean, you can't really compare it to the St. Paul's kind of thing. I mean, Summit out of New Jersey,
yeah.
they had a 68-game streak, you know. I mean, but other than that, like it starts to get, I mean, Georgetown Prep won 48. That's probably pretty
right.
comparable. But, you know, yeah, I was just kind of looking at that. I'm like, that's pretty amazing. And it kind of lets me ask you the next question, because I know we're going to talk about
sure.
the Boys Latin and St. Paul's rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know,
oh,
we've
yeah.
been talking about it. So I'm going to kind of let you, like, what's the significance of what that game is going to be this year?
Well, it's well, for St. Paul's, it's going to be even a bigger game because it's Brock's last game as in a regular season. Now,
yeah.
they probably will make the playoffs, so it
yeah.
won't be his last game. But it's going to be his last game, you know, in a regular season. So I know they're hyping up from that point. From an historical standpoint, it just doesn't get any better than the BL St. Paul's game. And the kids really get up for it. I think it's 51-47-1 is the overall record in favor of Boys Latin. We've been playing since 1933 against each other. And what's really the cool thing to me is that it's on the field, those kids want to, you know, they want to kill each other. Off the field, they're really great friends. And through the years, we've actually had brothers playing against brothers in that game. And I always thought that was a really neat angle.
Yeah.
Everybody certainly knows who Jeff Cook, was at Johns Hopkins. He's a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest players ever. But his brother Craig was at Boys Latin, and they played against each other. David Pollock played against his brother in the 92 championship game, and the McLaughlins played against each other in the 40s. And it's just a great rivalry. It's a friendly rivalry. It's a family rivalry. Dads have gone to BL and their sons have gone to St. Paul's and vice versa. And it's just crazy. The connections just, I could talk for hours on the connections and brothers playing against brothers and fathers and sons and uncles and cousins. It's really cool.
Yeah. And I think we're going to maybe not talk for hours, but, you know, I think the plan was is to still kind of have, you know, kind of do a little something before that game, because you mentioned, like, obviously
sure.
It will be Coach Mercado's, probably not his final game, but, you know, his final regular season game. So I'm sure that'll have some significance in and of itself.
I mean, we respect Rick Mercado a lot at Boys Latin, but we certainly hope it is his last game, because we certainly wouldn't want to see them in the playoffs.
So. Don't want to see him again. That's a one and done.
Yep. One of the things with some of these schools, when you play them at the end of the year or in the middle of the year or whenever, and you're not scheduled to play them again, a lot of times you hope you don't see them in the playoffs, because.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what was it?
Beating a team twice is really tough to do.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Boys Latin knows all about that. We know from, I'm sure you will not want to remember the Loyola Blakefield championship game, because, I mean, that BL team was stacked. Obviously, you guys won it the next year, but, you know, that was just cases where, you know, Loyola just played out of their mind in the second half to come back and win that game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, St. Mary's, I mean, nobody would have picked St. Mary's to win at all a couple years ago. I mean, if they did, well, I'm sure some St. Mary's fans did, but, you know.
Sure.
Anybody just kind of take
well, they got they had their face-off guy who got hot at the end of the year, and that, you know, you get a hot face-off guy and a hot goalie, and you can go very far.
Yeah,
you know, that Woodall kid was as good as I've ever seen.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it's one of those, once you get in those playoffs, it really is like a whole new ball game. That's as cliche as it gets, but I think it's as
absolutely
as well.
Yep.
Well, Matt, you know, I'm sure it won't be the last time we talk, you know, considering the the game that's coming up in a few weeks. But, you know, I appreciate you making some time today and just kind of talking MIAA with me.
Mike, it's been my pleasure.
All right. You have a good one.
You too. Take care, man.
All right.